Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patch. I'll be working the board for Dr. Kennedy and Dr. Reverend Harris. As soon as we get them to call in, we'll get this running here. Police schools, punishment, zero tolerance is a headline here. And that can be found at http://www.cnn.com. And here we have Dr. Harris. Dr. Harris.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Good evening, Dr.
Welcome,
Harris.
Welcome. How are
Show's
you
all yours. I'm doing fine. Just let everybody know that who I am and what I'm doing.
Thank you.
And
now
I turn it over to you.
Thank you for getting us on the floor tonight. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you.
And you're very welcome.
We're back with you again, Reverend Harris and Dr. Jean Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia. She's here with us on the West Coast. Hopefully she'll be calling here soon. She's on the train coming back into Fresno. We're just happy to be on the air again. A lot of things happening across the country, across the world. This radio show is very important, and we'd like to thank all of our supporters across the country and across the world for their support and prayers over the many years that we have been broadcasting. We birthed many, many shows, different organizations with different movements that has taken place here up under the umbrella of Real Talk with the number one doctors. We also thank Patch, who's running on board today. Brother Patch, he's also has a show called Fresno Fresno Homeless Sing the Blues. And we're just happy to have him with a show. So we've been doing a lot of heavy lifting here across the country. And what can I say? It is what it is. And so, but we'd like for you to go to our Facebooks, Floyd Harris Jr. National Network in Action Facebook, Real Talk with WITH, number one doctors. Go to our Freedom School Facebook. I was looking the other day, I have like maybe 9 or 10 Facebooks and websites. But you know, that's just part of the movement that we have to take on here. And so we're just, again, happy to be here on the show. Hopefully that we'll have some callers who will call in tonight. Brother Patch will let me know when someone is online, ready to come in. But last night we were talking about the situation that has happened in South Carolina with an African-American young lady who was in the classroom, and this white police officer came in and grabbed her around her throat, flipped her desk over, and drug her like she was a piece of meat in front of the class. Kind of reminded me of the rodeos where the cowboy or whoever that would be on a horse, and he would take his rope in the air and throw it down on the little calf or cow that's running for his life or her life, and then pull the rope and drag the little cow and flip him upside down and tie his little feet together. You know, just looking at the video of this situation yesterday, I mean, a couple of days ago, it just really, really bothersome to me that our little babies. First, you know, all this was happening to males. You know, Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown and Oscar Grant, Mario Marrero out of Vallejo. I mean, just many, 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 many black and brown people. Now all of a sudden, now it's happening to our women now. Sandra Bland, happened to her. And so, you know, what do we need to do? What do we need to do? Why is it right now that in this day and age that we having to deal with this type of behavior with police officers? You know, and I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what do we need to do so that our people, our babies, can be safe here in America. I mean, I don't send my child to school to be abused. I don't send my child I don't send my child to school to be abused. I don't send my child to public school system to be hit like that. So what do we need to do? First of all, why is the police officer even in the classroom in the first place? I mean, here we have administrators who go to school, get educated, go to college and what have you, and then all of a sudden they can't deal with our children in the classroom. So if the teacher and the administrators, counselors can't deal with our children in the public school system. I mean, this young lady didn't have a gun, okay? I mean, let's put it in perspective. She didn't have a gun. She didn't have a knife. She didn't have a bomb, right? She didn't have anything to hurt herself. You know, it was just a cell phone that she decided she didn't want to give up. So the police department there said that this officer, when they investigated, went against their policy. And the policy that that they were making reference to was that the police officer drug her and let her go. Said nothing about the chokehold. Now, what was interesting, I was listening to some video footage this morning on Facebook, just doing some more research. One of the young men who was in the classroom was being interviewed, and he said that the police officer walked up to the young lady and was speaking to her and told the young child next to her to move her desk, move your desk out the way. So why would the officer, if his intentions was to do what he did, why would he tell the student next to the young lady to move your desk out the way? Because the officer had already had in his mind what he was going to do already. He had to have it in his mind because he wouldn't have told the young child student next to them to move your desk. So that's a very interesting point there that I thought was very interesting to hear the interview of one of the students that was in the class. And the other piece that's really interesting is that how the person, the young lady who videotaped what happened, got arrested too. So without the video footage, it would have been pretty maybe hard to justify what really happened. So why did the young lady who was who was doing her videotaping get arrested? I cannot figure that out myself either. Another point is that the district attorney in that county or over that police department, it was told that they are not going to file charges against the police officer. Charges have to be filed from the FBI or the Civil Rights Division in Washington, D.C. So as I said last night, had I did that to my son or my nephew or one of my church members and someone caught it on camera, do you think that charges would not be brought up on me? I mean, really, police officers are supposed to know policy. They're supposed to know procedure. And dealing with a child, I mean, we're not dealing with someone who just robbed a bank. We're not dealing with a child who just held up a store. We're not dealing with a child who stole someone's car. We're dealing with a child who disagreed with giving up their phone and then had to be assaulted. I mean, I'm reading that her arm is in a cast now, right? And all for what? All for what? What day and time are we living in right now? Do we really need police officers in the classroom? Do we really need them on the school campus? I mean, that's a question that I think that we need to really examine right now, because I'm feeling that the administrators should have been able to deal with the situation without calling the police. I mean, my God, you want to put a school on lockdown because a child doesn't want to give up their phone? I mean, what do we do now in this day and age when we're sitting here, don't know if our children are going to come back home? I mean, I would really, really hate to be the parents of this young child right now. I would really, really hate to be the parents of this young child right now, because I just can't imagine what is going through their mind right now at this day and age right now. I just can't imagine, you know, how they're feeling right now. This happened 3 or 4 days ago, and it seemed like every day somebody, black or brown, is getting killed by cops all over the country. And I mean, I look at my children now, I look at my grandchildren now, and I just can't even imagine. I cannot even imagine something this horrifying happening to them. So I don't know. Brother Patch, do we have anyone on the line tonight that may be tuning in tonight? Not, it's okay.
There's nobody on the line right now. Dr. Kennedy said that she would be on the line in about, 15 minutes, she said, when she texted me. It's going to be about another 8 to 10 minutes before she's able to get on the phone. It's just you and me.
Okay. Well, Brother Patch, from your perspective, what do you think that's going on here in America with this police department? You've been in the military. You're a vet. What is from your perspective right now? You're my brother. Of course, that you're Caucasian descendant. But the colors don't matter. I mean, we're human beings, and we should all should be treated with dignity and respect. So
absolutely.
Why is it that all this is happening right now?
The law enforcement agencies around the country are under, quietly, the control of DHS, Department of Homeland Security. That's obvious. Take a look at the uniforms they're wearing. They're all camouflage uniforms. They've got a lot of camouflage military vehicles. Their weapons are coming straight in from the Army. I mean, they are being militarized by DHS. And it starts with the children. I mean, that's what happened in Nazi Germany. They got the children's minds to agree with them and not their own parents. Over the last, 61 years, 62 years, somewhere in that vicinity, like I said before, the TV has been the propaganda machine. Generational programming has been happening since then. Schools, everything falls in line if you can see that what they want is the minds of the children to do the government's bidding when time comes. Turn their parents in for whatever violations they've done, their brothers or sisters. Doesn't make any difference. That's why the children you bring them up the way you want them to be, not the way the parents want, because that generational programming has taken the family values out of our lives. Literally taking them out of our lives. And that's been happening, like I said, since about 60 to 62 years now. Generational programming, CIA says, why do we need brainwashing when we got the TV? It's all to get the children acclimated to what's getting ready to happen. And the adults, getting them anesthetized to what's getting ready to happen so they don't see it coming. That officer, in this case, he should be arrested, because in my mind, he done stepped over so many lines, it's not even funny. Number one, she was not armed with anything but a cell phone. Come on now. I'm speaking the truth here. A cell phone. Okay. Turn it off and put it in your pocket. Put it in your purse, put it away. The officer had no reason, nor did he have justification. He's flipping that desk upside down with her underneath it and slamming them both into the floor. He needs to be arrested for battery, assault and battery with intent, have his badge removed, and then prosecuted. That's what needs to be done with this officer and any other officer who does anything of that same nature.
So, Brother Patch, I want to talk to you about the termination of this officer, because I think that our listeners and supporters need to really understand what I'm about to say. Okay, so the officers were terminated. Okay, so everybody is clapping hurrah, hurrah. Okay, so what we have to understand is this is a legal matter now, right? He's going to appeal his termination, right, to the appeal board, whatever that process is. And he just might get his job back, because if he's saying that, you know, look, this is how I was trained, you know, I was the one who was called in. I'm just being devil's advocate now.
Right.
I was the one who was called. I'm the officer now. I was the one that was called in, and I was told that this young lady was being rude in class, and the other students was not learning and was being disrespectful. And so I came in and I asked her nicely to, right? So when they say ask, they're going to use the word command, right? Because when an officer asks,
correct,
it is a command, right? And I gave her my command, and she refused. So what was I supposed to do, right? And I walked up to her and I asked her again, and she refused again. And so I just decided, and the training that I received was that I was supposed to take her down.
Neutralize the threat.
So this is where we at, Brother Pat. He's going to go and say, this was the training I received from my superiors. Now, since I'm doing my responsibility, now I'm being terminated. This is how I was trained. So there's going to be a legal issue here on his half, fighting the termination of the police department, and he's going to base it off how he was trained. But they're saying that because he drugged her, he was out of compliance with their training. So it seems like this is going to go back and forth from a training issue right now.
But it's not a training issue. A police officer is trained to take care of and neutralize possible threats. This is a minor child. This is a minor child. This person falls under different laws. There's things an officer cannot do unless that child has a weapon, a gun, a knife, or a bomb. They can't do anything. And most departments have their standard operating procedures. I don't know what the SOPs are there, but I don't think it's flip the student upside down in their desk and slam them to the floor and breaking their arms. I believe the parents here and the student have grounds for a lawsuit and filed charges against him for assault and battery with intent. And a lawsuit for suffering, pain, medical, the whole bit, the whole gamut. This officer was out of control. I don't know. I don't see why or how he can even claim his training taught him to do this to a minor. If it is, that department needs to have their training procedures completely revamped, because you can't treat a minor child in such a manner without severe consequences. But the judges being what they are, it's going to be hard.
So one of the things, Brother Patch, when we talk about training police officers, there's something called a police training academy. I know here in Fresno, they have a training academy here at City College. And whoever wants to be a police officer has to go through this process of training. And I think I'm going to, because I know at one point in time that the instructor wanted me to come out and talk to those folks who wanted to be officers. And I don't know what happened. I didn't get a chance to get out there. But I think that it's important for us as taxpayers to take some time out to go down and see what they are teaching these police officers, because that's kind of like the introduction into policing, right? And then once you get sworn in as a police officer, then there's more training within the police department that you go through. One of the things that me and Dr. Kennedy talk about all the time is post-traumatic stress. I believe, and I would argue, that many of our police officers, the divorce rate is very high being a police officer. I don't know if people know that or not, because of the type of work, the stress that police officers go through day in and day out. And so the divorce rate is high. So at home, it's not so rosy as all of us think. They make good money, but when you go home, it's not so rosy. So I don't feel that we are really paying enough attention to the post-traumatic stress of police officers here across the country. One, police officers, when they shoot someone, to me, they should be psychologically evaluated independently. Two, they need to be drug tested. Those two things there, Brother Patch, is not happening in America. They're not being drug tested, and they're not being psychologically evaluated when they do a police shooting. When a police shooting happened or a situation happened, listen, I was working for BNSF Railroad. If I was to cut my finger, just a splinter or something, I would have to get drug tested. So how is it that I could work for BNSF Railroad working with trains, right, and spiking 8 hours a day with a spike? I'm not dealing with, taking no one life, but if I hurt myself or if I hurt someone else, I would have to be drug tested. So why is it that nowhere in America, land of the free, home of the brave, that our police officers are not drug tested, randomly drug tested, or even drug tested when they pull that trigger and he's psychologically evaluated? What are your thoughts about that, Brother Patch?
Very simple. Anytime an officer is involved in any altercation, drug tests should be administered within a very, very short time. I would say within an hour to an hour and a half, 90 minutes, whichever is most convenient, and, he can get there, take the wagon out to him, take a sample, test it, and go up according to what the results are. Any kind of altercation, with a student shooting somebody, taking somebody down physically, wrestling with them, they need to be tested. Absolutely they do. Them more than anybody else, because there's a little term they use. Ignorance of the law is no excuse, and theirs is definitely, they have no excuse. They know the law. They know it. And I have a feeling that a lot of our officers across the country, here in Fresno as well, not only have a high alcoholism rate, but I do believe if they would be tested and psychologically evaluated, you will find out there's a large number that are also abusing drugs, those drugs that they confiscate. A lot of times does not make it into the lockup for evidence. It just doesn't make it. They need to be tested and psychologically profiled or psychologically tested as well, especially after shooting, because that does something to a person's brain that lasts for the rest of their life. Killing somebody is something you don't forget. You just can't get it out of your head, and it will stay with you. And they need to be tested periodically in a situation like that. Drug testing, totally random and often. That's my opinion on that. Because they're getting away with murder, literally murder, and it's got to stop.
Well, folks, there you have Patch, Richard Patch from Fresno, California, who is running a board for us tonight. We're waiting for Dr. Jean Kennedy to come with us. We hope that she'll be coming here in the next 5 minutes. We're here with Real Talk with the number one doctors, the number one radio show in the land across the world. We thank all of our supporters for supporting us, following us for many, many years. We do a lot of heavy lifting. Please go to YouTube and look me up, Reverend Harris, Reverend Floyd D. Harris Jr., Reverend Dr. Floyd D. Harris Jr. on YouTube. Google my name, see what comes up. Know the person that's on the other side of the receiver here that's speaking to you. Know what type of integrity and character that I have, because it's really, really important that you know. We're coming up on our half-minute mark here.
2 minutes and 30 seconds.
3 minutes. We have about 3 minutes before our show ends, and we're just thankful again for everyone across the world. Brother Pax, you have a radio show. I'd like to kind of talk to our radio listening audience about your radio show. Can you kind of give us some history about your show and about yourself, and why did you feel so compelled to start a show dealing with the homeless issues here in Fresno?
Okay, it's Fresno Homeless Speaks Out with the Blues. The reason that I have been compelled to take this and run with it is the fact that I was homeless here in town for 3 years. I watched the abuse, verbal, physical, mental, psychological, given to the homeless, not only from the police and the sheriff's department, but also from the mental health people. The shelters here in town, they're not the nicest people in there, because it's those who are running it are what we call programmers. They have gone into that shelter's program for alcohol and drug abuse. And they're in there for 6 months, 9 months, 18 months, whatever the program happens to be. And they're not very nice at times, and a lot of times they're not, because they are kicking a bad habit, alcohol or drugs, either one. They're both a drug, and they're trying to kick it. So they're not going to be, a lot of times, the nicest people there is. But we try to let the homeless speak for themselves. We also take a look at the different laws governing them. Look at the city, right now, City Councilman Clint Oliver. We are looking at his reference to vagrant or vagrancy and investigating what the legal aspect of that is. So we do put out a lot of information, and we usually put out a lot in a very short period of time. But being homeless myself and seeing everything that happened, when this was offered, that was it. I just said, yes, it's got to happen. We got to get this stopped and stopped quick. And that's where we're sitting right now, watching something that is working across the country, wondering why our own mayor won't use it. Housing first. It's working. Salt Lake City has a functional zero homeless population. A zero functionality. Others are going that direction. Boise, Idaho is going the same direction that L.A. went. If the shelters are full, don't arrest them. You can't. It's a violation of their Eighth Amendment constitutional right. That is cruel and unusual punishment because there's no place else for them to go. A sidewalk, a cliff spot in an alley, a park, all within the city limits. So it's moving slow, but our own city government here in this town doesn't want to seem to take a look at what the other cities and other states are doing. And that has got me upset quite a bit because they've gotten millions and millions and millions of dollars into this city for the homeless and never made it there. The homeless did not benefit from that. I'd like to know who. Finding that out, well, it would take somebody knowing exactly what to do and exactly what to look for, which is the auditors of the federal government in Washington, D.C. In these days here and really soon, I'm going to call them to find out if they will come in and this city. Find out what happened to money. These are the things we're trying to do with the homeless, for the homeless, trying to let them speak for themselves. No one else has. No one has attempted it, with the exception of my co-host and I, Al Williams, and myself, Richard Patch. There you have a quick synopsis of what we do with the Fresno Homeless Speaks Out with the Blues. Dr. Harris?
Well, Brother Patch, thank you for your comments there. We're still waiting for Dr. Gene Kennedy to come in with us here. I think I see her. She's been traveling. But my brother Fats, can you give us an idea on the lawsuits that has taken place here in Fresno?
Well, the first lawsuits were 2006, 2007, I believe they were. And that was a class action suit. And the city had to pay $2.3 million. They lost the whole suit. Because what was happening was they were tearing down the encampments that were present at that time. They were throwing away personal belongings, important documents like birth certificates, driver's license, whatever that personal that documentation was. They're just literally throwing it away, indiscriminately tossing it in the trash dumpsters and into the garbage trucks and out to the landfill. And they were hurting people at the same time. And that was the first one. And in 2011, they started with the encampment I was in on Santa Fe Avenue. They did the same thing there. Eventually, they did. We held them off till about 4:30, quarter to 5 in the evening, with a wall of people. They say that was the largest turnout of citizens of this city trying to help the homeless that had ever been there. There was about 150 to 200 citizens, concerned citizens of Fresno, there at that encampment I was at to help us. But eventually, they got their way. And there was, I'm not sure how many lawsuits filed, but those had to be individual suits because they did not meet the criteria for a class action suit. But every suit that was filed, they won. The defense attorneys did not lose one case, have not lost a case, period, since the suit in 2007. And this is where it's really boggling my mind, because not only did they lose these lawsuits and then the individual lawsuits, but it has cost the city hundreds, if not millions of millions of dollars in wages, vehicle maintenance, fuel, name it. They got to pay insurance for all these people, retirement for all these people to come out there and tear apart an encampment. Yeah. The city's losing money
Brother
left Pat, and right.
Brother, go ahead. Not to cut you off, but Dr. Gene Kennedy just got off the Amtrak train. She's traveling tonight. And so we want to give her some time to come in and talk to our listeners here. She wanted to come on earlier, but her train got in late. But we're just here again with Dr. Gene Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia, with us. And we're just excited to have her with us today. Dr. Gene Kennedy, can you say hello to your listening audience?
Well, hello, everyone. Hello there, Brother Patch. Thank you for taking care of business. And, boy, talk about being in multiple places at once. It's amazing what technology can do.
Yes.
And so I just hopped the train, and I'm listening to what you're saying and getting a ride home at the same time. What, I love technology. And, you know, while I was on the train, I got a text that said we just got a new member to my family, and we have a new daughter, new grandchild. Not for me. Actually, it would be my grandniece, yes. So I've been texting all across the United States and Jamaica and England that we have a new person in our family, Livia Donner Kennedy. That is my brother, and a brother who, by the way, came into this country and after 2 years became a homeless person. Because of his bipolar, his medical problems, which this country doesn't do very good at helping people who have medical problems. They criminalize mental health. And so I definitely know what that feels like to have a brother who got lost in the system instead of getting medical treatment. He was punished for his own mental illness. But out of that, he birthed a child who today makes him a grandfather for the second time, and so I'm very thankful to be part of that celebration today. And Brother Patch, I'm sure you can relate to that, knowing how the system will criminalize homeless people at every point possible. And instead of giving them the help they need, they throw them out as garbage, they throw them out as being useless, they throw them out into society instead of helping. And if we're all honest, even our listening audience, I'm sure someone can say, I know somebody who knows somebody. You can put a name and a face of people that you
That's
know
right.
that is either being homeless long-term or short-term. And this situation has to be eradicated and it has to be fixed. And so that's the reason we do these sorts of shows, to bring it home to where people live. But anyway, I'm rejoicing tonight. I'm happy tonight. So, Brother Patch, go ahead and share the rest of the information that you were with the listening audience.
Okay. On the lawsuits, I'm trying to remember where I said off that. Your new addition to your family caught me by surprise. And again, congratulations. And good to hear your voice and safe back in Fresno. But back to the lawsuits that took place, the money that the city has lost and paid out to have these encampments removed also includes state money, too, because they're on Santa Fe Avenue. Everything underneath the Highway 180 overpass was state property. You had there was about 10 to 12 highway patrolmen. Now you have Caltrans coming in. We're talking high dollar wages for both those people. And there was quite a few of them. Supervisors for Caltrans were there. You're paying all kinds of vehicle maintenance and the high cost of fuel. My gosh, ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous that they could do things like this. But it seems like the city absolutely does not care what it costs, even if it costs them to file bankruptcy. And it's just totally unbelievable. They don't care about you. And, well, with the exception of the drivers on the two dump trucks and that big Caterpillar hay squeeze that they were squeezing all the torn down encampments with and lifting them up and putting them in the truck, in the garbage trucks. Because we literally stopped them, and I was looking right into the eyes of these drivers, and their eyes told me they did not want to be there. They did not want to do what they did, but they were told, if you don't, you're fired. That's what I read in their faces, and it was just totally unbelievable. So some of those people have been there for, oh my gosh, a couple of years. Those that were coming out of prison, that were on parole, and put there by the state. They said, this is where you're going to live for the next 3 or 5 years or two, whatever their parole was, how many years. This is where you're going to live, right here. And I better see you here at a certain time at night. And when I come back in the morning, you better still be here. And it's just forced to be homeless. Okay. Unacceptable. Their treatment was unacceptable. I don't know how many of the women on that street that I hugged came to me crying, and there was nothing I could do. Nothing I could do except console them with a hug, a bottle of water, you know, and talk to them. It hurt. Ladies and gentlemen, it hurt. Unless you've been out there, unless you, as they say, walk a mile in that other man's shoes or other woman's shoes, you have no right to speak of homelessness and what it means, how it feels. You don't even have the right to say it should be cleaned up. Take them and arrest them. No, you can't. Vagrancy laws aren't even enforceable anymore. They're so vague. And most of them violate the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution. Cruel and unusual punishment. There's also a part of the First Amendment is violated there too. So it's sometimes I have a little bit hard time speaking because it is very personal to me. Something that's 58 years old, 3 years ago. Yeah, it's 58 years old. I didn't think that ever happened to me. I worked on my entire life since I was 15. Then boom, there I am on the streets. Didn't pay a red light violation in Turlock. And it was too much for me to pay. So I lost my license, lost my job, and on the street I went. So it's the lawsuits are there. And I have a funny feeling there's going to be another round of lawsuits here pretty soon. I'm hearing an undercurrent that is pointing in that direction. Anyhow, let's put it that way. More teardowns, more pushes. Well, this time the lawsuits are going to contain constitutional violations. This is going to happen. This is really going to happen. And watch. And if you don't believe me, ladies and gentlemen, check out for yourself. Google these things up. Eighth Amendment, First Amendment, shelters, Los Angeles' lawsuit, Boise, Idaho's lawsuit, Salt Lake City's zero functional homeless population. It's all out there. I do it constantly and find things I didn't even know about that was going on. The militarization of our law enforcement, police and sheriff's departments. Look at them. Read about it. Google it. FEMA camps. Google them. There are those who are likening a FEMA camp to a concentration camp in Nazi Germany, World War II. Internment camps are even being called. World War II here in California, it was the Japanese that were sent to internment camps. Chinese were sent to internment camp up near Sonora, California, and it is called Chinese Camp. It later turned over to the California Army National Guards as a training area for them. I was part of that area. We trained there. There's an island in the San Francisco Bay. It was an internment camp for the Japanese. Google these things. We're going to a militarized law enforcement across the country, controlled by the Department of Homeland Security. It's going that way. Open your eyes. Take a look. Take a deep breath. And ask yourself, why? And then try to find something you can do about it. Because all of us, not just